just the home defeat to Morecambe this week. Craig Fisher says we were the authors of our own downfall, with poor game management on and off the pitch. David says we found ourselves two goals up despite not playing well, and rather than keeping the ball with short passes to contain the game, we were continually pinging long crossfield balls which were easily cut out. Gresty Road Ender says we chased a third when we should have shut up shop. Entertainment doesn't matter, winning does. James says we got what we deserved. Poor performance and once again incapable of beating a poor team. Peter Marshall described it as a terrible result. Joe Goddard said they were naive, but they'll come good again. But James Hanley says they're allowed one bad half. Fourth, with plenty of games to go, we go again. Aaron Lewis says we were due a blip. To have happened without Bell makes sense, but maybe a kick up the arse for the remaining games. Ben Benson, who is still trying to work out how he felt, thought there were too many mistakes by too many people, but adds the subs were baffling and momentum killing. Callum agrees with the subs. They were made at the wrong time and killed the momentum. We never really got going other than a 20-30 minute spell. We can't afford any more repeats now. Andy thought the subs were too early and changed the game, adding the goals were poor to concede too. Neil Hulse also mentions the subs, but asks who decided Kirk for Lee was right at 2-2. Tom Mayle adds that CBR doesn't help defensively against a counter-attacking team, but the defence and midfield never look composed all game. Andy O'Neill says we were 2-0 up against a counter-attacking team and played right into their hands. Poor game management at the end cost us, but let's get behind this group. Dave Gallagher says that could be very costly at the end of the season. Hello, welcome back to the latest episode of the Railway Men podcast. To help us go through the Morecambe defeat from Saturday, our panel today is Tim Robinson. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Stu. Hi, guys.
Trevor Griffiths. Hello, Trevor.
Hi, boys.
And Steve Hatton. Hello, Steve.
Hello, everybody.
Now, Steve, I'm going to start with you. Same team as last week. No changes on the pitch. The subs bench, we stayed with two goalies. But Tabiner lasted a week returning, and then he was out with illness. But then he's replaced with Zach Williams, who's making his return. Happy, I presume, with the same team starting as the one that won at Notts County?
Yeah, I think so. They'd obviously earned it. Obviously, a bit of a change on the bench. I thought there may have been a little bit of rotation, but then we've not had a game in midweek. So going into it, I looked at it and I thought, yeah, no complaints about that. And this isn't hindsight, but I had a little bit of trepidation because I thought, actually, the only real bad spell we've had this year coincided with injuries. And my theory, you know, every team has a bad run, don't they? And I was looking at this fixture thinking this could be a bit trickier than we think. And so it proved, really. But looking at the team, I was as happy as I could be with it, yeah.
Trevor, we'll go into the game. Now, I'm led to believe there was some rain before kickoff in South Cheshire on Saturday. I thought that Crewe started off quite poorly in terms of being able to hold on to the ball. And I wasn't sure whether that was due to the weather making the pitch really difficult to play on, or Morecambe's press, or a little bit of a combination of both.
Combination of both. Where Shiloh Tracy was playing down, obviously, the main stand side, It was terrible to keep your feet, and every time he went to get up control, it bounced in a way. And yeah, playing on that side of the field in the first half was difficult. Yeah, Morecambe came with a game plan, you know, to hit us, press us, and then it was on the break, which he did a few times. The number eight, I think, was Adams. You know, I thought he was excellent in the first 10, 15 minutes. I thought, oh, why is nobody getting a grip of him? Which is where a Luke Cofford would have come in, strangely enough, because he wouldn't have got that far up the pitch with Luke playing one way or the other. Yeah, the first 10, 15 minutes, we were well off the pace.
I'm glad you just said that about the pitch and where Shiloh was playing, because I think I spent the first 15 minutes or so telling my dog that the difference between Shiloh Tracy and Charlie Kirk is that Shiloh Tracy didn't come through Crewe's Academy, so he doesn't know how to control the ball and keep it. But if it's down to the pitch, then I'm gonna forgive him, and I'll let the dog know when we finish recording this that I was wrong. Tim, I'm gonna come to you. What I would say to start with is last week on the podcast, Steve Davis made the very good point that we need to be patient, we need to be calm, we need to get behind the boys. I didn't feel calm and I didn't feel patient at the start of that game. And I don't know whether this is just something that I don't know if everyone else is feeling this, has to just be aware of for the last few games of the season, that every game feels massive now. And I think this was a big example for me. I don't know if you felt the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of felt a little bit the same as Steve. I was a bit worried about this one. And I kind of thought it was more likely to resemble the Accrington Harrogate game than the Notts County game, in that they were probably going to be defensive. And I think they were. They sat in a pretty much a 5-4-1 and let our centre halves have it, and then pressed it when we moved it to our fullbacks or into midfield. And they basically did to us what we did to Notts County. Basically said, go on then, play through us if you can. And we really struggled to. And yeah, when a team comes and sets up like that, the crucial thing is always going to be to get an early goal, because it basically ruins their plan then. Whereas if you don't get an early goal, they sense that their game plan's winning and they get more and more confident in the plan. And then, you know, there's every chance that they can nick one. And for the first 20 minutes, it just didn't look like we were going to get an early goal. In fact, I think they had two pretty presentable chances that they dragged wide. Because, yeah, they were, as the boys have said, they were sitting in, they were waiting until we got it in midfield. Then they were pressing us really well. As Trev said, that Adams was great, I thought. Yeah, they had two chances that they dragged wide of the back post. And then, even our goal, when it did come, and, you know, thank God we did get an early goal, it actually came from their attack. Again, I think it was Adams who ran forward with it, and we won it back. And literally up to that point, we hadn't turned them. Our strength has been hitting teams on the break, right? Hitting teams early, getting the ball forward and turning defences. And we just didn't have a chance to do it, literally until that moment.
Do you want to talk us through that goal then, Tim, since you started?
Yeah. So Adams carried it out of defence. It was actually looking like quite a dangerous break from him. And he must have carried it 50 yards into our half. And then he just kind of, I don't know if he ran out of legs or ran out of options. There certainly weren't many other Morecambe players up with him. And he just kind of seemed to lose a little bit of momentum. And Osterfield stepped in and took it off him and laid it into Charlie Kirk. And as I say, I think it was the first time that their whole team had pushed up in one block, rather than just kind of, you know, pressing from a deep position. And that allowed Kirk to just float a little ball behind their defence and turn them. And Elliot Nevitt made a brilliantly timed run onto it, beat the keeper to it, you know, won the header. If it's the other way around, by the way, I'm screaming at our keeper for not coming and getting that. But he sort of came halfway and saved Elliot's header, but only palmed it up in the air. And brilliant from Elliot Nevitt to get there first and calmly nod it into the empty net. Brilliant goal. And then all of a sudden, you're kind of like, thank God for that. We've played pretty poorly. They've come and their plan's working. But we've done it. We've got the early goal. Everything's going to be all right now.
I think that mindset might be part of the problem that we'll get to later. Steve, go on.
I think one of the few pluses from yesterday was, to me, there's signs of a real understanding between Kirk and Nevitt. There's a few occasions when they linked up quite nicely, and obviously they did the same at Notts County last week, and that's one of the pluses that I'm taking, that when he comes inside Charlie Kirk, there's been a few nice moments where him and Nevitt have linked up. That's my one plus. I don't want to give any spoilers for what comes next.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I do think Nevitt is doing his absolute best to make sure Charlie Kirk gets no assists for this season. Obviously, the ball that he put through at Notts County, Nevitt takes it around the keeper, scores one assist for Kirk, takes the penalty instead. Yesterday, Kirk plays the ball through to Nevitt. Nevitt plays it off a 1-2 off the keeper, no assist for Charlie Kirk. So I would say that, you know, it's about time Charlie Kirk does get some recognition as an assist for these balls he's putting through for him.
Pre-assists are the new assists, Jim.
Yeah, true. Okay. Right. Moving on. I'm going to get all the way to halftime. I say we sort of seem fairly comfortable. I think that possibly is going to play into part of the problem later on. And then Trev, straight after halftime, Shiloh Tracy puts us 2-0 ahead. That's it. Game's got put to bed. With 3 more points on the road to promotion. Everything's easy. Do you want to talk about the goal before we get onto that second bit?
Yeah, Ed Turns got the ball on the halfway line and found Olacek, who gave it to Shiloh, and he did really well. Cut inside on his left foot, hit it. Now, you know, we'll go on to keepers and this, that and the other. But if my keeper's pushing that into the top corner, you know, every goal that goes in, you criticise, or the goalkeeper should have done better, this, that and the other. I just praise Shiloh. He hit it hard and put it on target. But from their point of view, the keeper should be doing better than that, if I'm perfectly honest. But yeah, he did well. And then we went chasing the third, which is the problem.
Steve, before we get onto that, I put a tweet out yesterday when he scored and said that he's needed that. I don't think we've seen him at his best for a little while now, but, you know, cutting in, taking shots, scoring goals, that's what we need. I think that's what he needs as well as the season goes on.
I think that'll help him, but I still don't think we've seen that dynamic wanting to take the fullback on Shiloh we saw in those summer months. I mean, even here, he's cut inside, where his strength in the first part of the season was going down the outside. So I still, it'll obviously, hopefully the result hasn't knocked any confidence he got from the goal. There have been signs that he's improving, but to me, we are still a considerable distance from the player who we had in those opening few games when he was unmanageable and no one in this division could stop him. He's definitely a little bit off that. Hopefully we're getting back there.
Do you, Steve, subscribe to the Tim Robinson theory that he's been overcoached and his natural game has been coached out of him?
I think so. I think if you look at his trajectory of when he was maybe quite fresh to the club and maybe a little bit more raw in terms of the coaching that he'd received, he was a player with an instinct, wasn't he? He got the ball and he went to take his man on. And maybe the more that coaching's got into him, maybe he is now beginning to think things through a little bit more. And maybe this is a period that he's got to get through. A bit similar to Dan Adjei from last year, if you like. And obviously, maybe Adjei arrived as maybe more of a complete player than Shiloh. But I think there's lots of similarities between them. So I will doff my cap to Tim's theory. I'm with him on that one, yeah.
I'm going to stick up for him. I think we've seen real signs of improvement from him over the last few weeks. I think he's rightly in the team ahead of Rowe at the moment. And I do think he is starting to assimilate some of the ideas he's been given. So there were twice in the first half where he went down the outside and put low balls into the box that we could have scored from. One almost ended up in an own goal when the centre-half missed it with his right foot and it bounced off his standing leg and went just wide at the back post with Charlie Kirk steaming in to score if he doesn't get a touch on it. One when he put one in at the front post and it was criminal that no one had attacked the front post for that one. So that's two examples of him attacking the space down the outside. And then if you look at that that second goal, what was really notable to me was the run that Holacek makes. So Holacek passes him the ball and then makes a run kind of... Well, it was an inside run, but it was, you know, down the outside of the two centre-halves. And often we'd see Tracy, even though that run's being made, still try and get it onto his right foot and cross it in and effectively make the same run. But he didn't. He realised where the space was. And the space, because of the run that Holacek had made, was to cut inside and hit it with his left foot. So I think that's a clear sign of improvement for me. It's a clear sign that he's starting to understand what we're trying to do and use some of the options that he's being given by the players around him. So if he can do that as well as use his normal game, which is knock it past the man and either hit it or cross it, then he's going to be a hell of a player.
All right, I'm going to move on. My next question is open to any one of the three of you who feel like you want to answer this question or you have an answer to this question. What went wrong after that goal?
We went chasing the third and we've no need to. We should have gone into away tactic mode, sat behind the ball and hit them on the break. Let them try and break us down. But we're chasing the third. Because we're at home, we feel we need to. And we didn't need to. They had done nothing after we'd scored to suggest that they were going to get back in the game. Then they made the substitutions, and both, and I'm going to criticise because it'll come, both our fullbacks are still bombing on, and they've got the quicker players now out wide. And it's just, we'll come to their first goal. Billington's caught out of position and the bloke's in behind him. And that's what happened. We went chasing a third goal when we'd no need to. Just play simple. I'd have gone into away mode then. The game's done.
And I think the follow-on from that, as we all know, a goal. And I know that Mark, who obviously is off in the pod fairly regularly, talks a lot about psychology of the game. That one goal and the way they got it gave them the boost they needed. And that changed the whole dynamic of the game. And I think with combination of what Trez mentioned, the subs, the changes, and the way that goal went in, suddenly Morecambe have got a sniff.
I just want to kind of put the comeback in the context of the match as a whole. Morecambe started really well the first 20 minutes, but from then, when we scored against the run of play, up until the goal that made it 2-1, that was probably the most dominant performance from us against any team this season. There was absolutely no way in the world that they should have been getting back in that game. But as the boys have said, they made the substitutions. I actually thought we started getting a little bit sloppy at that stage. I thought we were missing passes. We weren't tracking runners. We'd stopped doing the basics that had got us in a really good position. And yeah, as Steve said, that the goal completely changed it. And it is a howler. It goes under his armpit. I think the two technical flaws we've seen with Harvey Davis this season is he goes down too slow, which we saw for that goal. And sometimes when he parries it straight instead of parrying it out wide. And we saw that for the second goal. I think maybe for this first one, the slight extenuating circumstances, that's the word, in that a few defenders kind of dived in front of him. But it's still a massive technical blooper to let it go under your armpit like he did. It wasn't like there was a load of power on the shot. But I think what Lee Bell said in his post-match interview, that this will be a lesson for them. And I think that's the right tone to take. We've been brilliant this season and we shouldn't get carried away by one defeat. But we stopped doing the good things well. We stopped doing the basic things well and we got punished for it. And any team in this division, if you stop doing the basics well, will punish you. So that's the lesson. We've got to be much more ruthless and switched on than we were there, because we had our foot on their throats and we took it off and let them stand back up again.
Yeah, I think we'll sort of get to how bad this was at the end of this chat. But just sticking on that goal, I think it's very clearly a goalkeeping error. But I agree with what Trevor said 5 minutes ago. If we're playing sensibly, if we're doing the things that we should be doing at 2-0 up, it never even gets to that stage. It never get, Billington's out of position. He's not the only player who's not playing sensibly and smartly at that point. I agreed with Trevor just then. I'm going to agree with Steve now. It then just sets the tone of, I talked last week about telling Mark off when he was confident it was 3-0 at Notts County that we'd won. And I said, we've all watched Crew long enough to know this story. I felt that yesterday after that first one went in. I was like, oh, we've all seen this so many times. You know, we support a team in the fourth division. They're in the fourth division because they don't win as many as they lose. And there was ways of losing games. And that's one we've seen before. I think there was a lot of possibleness that we'd already won the game on the pitch. Trevor, do you subscribe to the opinion that maybe the management team on the bench thought that we'd won the game and that's what the substitutions were about? Were they a bit too early?
Yeah, I'd have never taken Nevitt off. I thought he was the dangerous. Their centre half, he occupies centre halves, doesn't he, properly? You know, he doesn't give him a minute's peace. And I think he was a bit down when he came off, which is not normal. You know, it was a little bit too early, I agree. And going back to what we were talking about, yesterday we missed Luke Cofford more than we ever thought we would. They wouldn't have got them goals. He'd have, no, the ball had got past him, but the man wasn't in one or two situations. We needed somebody to sit in front of the two centre-halves. And Connor Thomas had a good game, but he was in the opposition's box when we were 2-0 up. No, just sit, in the middle of the park and stop any breakaways. But yeah, I thought the changes didn't help us at all. Shiloh was doing well, took him off, brought Rowan, who then went about and having shots from 30 yards over the bar and this, that and the other. No, just keep the ball, get to the byline, get a crossing. We don't need you shooting from there when we're 2-0 up. Yeah, the changes didn't help us at all.
It just seemed too early to me. We haven't got a game in the week. 60 minutes, make those changes on 75, 80 minutes, some fresh legs, half an hour to go. We got 3 week. It just seemed an early call to me.
Apologies to who this was. I might have been Tom Mayall. So if it was, then Tom, thank you. He made the point in the intro that I've just read out at the start of this pod that Baker Richardson's not the person you want to bring on to help defensively against a counter-attacking team. He's the sort of player you want to bring on when we're under the cosh. They're pumping balls into the box. They've got the ball. And I think I agree with that. You just don't see as much running after lost causes with him that you do with Nevitt. I think taking him off, Nevitt, that is, and then also Tracy as well, who's just scored a goal for the first time in months. I just think it was a bad decision. And I don't want to get on Dicko and Kenny's back and say, does this happen without Lee Bell there? But does this happen without Lee Bell being on the touchline?
Yeah, because Belly was in enough contact. They're not stupid. No, I think it'd have been a joke decision between all three. They probably, if you've got a game in midweek, I understand the substitutions being as early as they were. If you're going to bring CBR on, why not playing with Nevitt? And then it stops their centre-halves getting the ball and being able to play out because they'd both be covered. I'd have just stopped the game, shut the game off at 2-0. I didn't think we needed to make any changes. Just see the game out. Charlie Kirk came off. He was an outlet on that side of the field because the fullback didn't want to engage against Charlie. And then when we moved, I think Olacek ended up there, and that's where the third goal came from because the lad was allowed to go past Mattis and get his crossing. So, yeah, the changes certainly didn't help.
Yeah, I think the Charlie Kirk point's a good one because first half, I think that was very clear where our strength was. Our left winger, being Charlie Kirk, was a lot better as a footballer than their right back. I think he's still a bit hampered by fitness. I'm not sure he's quite there yet. But, you know, he was clearly a better footballer. So taking him off, I think it was 2-2 when we took him off. I didn't think that was the right decision either. Now, Tim, there is another person we haven't spent any time talking about yet, the man in the middle. He was good, wasn't he?
I just felt like he was guessing. I don't think it's that interesting to talk about the refereeing. I thought there was a pretty clear-cut foul on Demetriou and the build-up to one of the corners. And to be honest, I think they were wrestling him every time we had a set-piece, which was a lot. Their tactics seemed to be to impede him rather than to challenge him for the ball. And it was just a frustrating number of decisions that seemed to be on both ways, to be honest, just like guesses. There seemed to be some bad fouls that weren't even given as fouls. And then next minute, you'd see the whistle blown because almost like the referee wanted to make up for the fact he hadn't given the one a couple of minutes before. He was another one of those referees that seems to have a fruit machine in his head and makes the decision based on what lands rather than what the actual situation demanded. Bizarre performance from the referee, I thought, but, you know.
I agree. I don't really like talking about refs, as I say every time I talk about referees on this podcast. But, I mean, the penalty, there's a video going around on Twitter of the manhandling of Mickey. It's shocking when you see just how close the referee is and the fact the referee is looking at him being just wrestle. It is a wrestle to the floor. That was awful. I think the foul on Osterfield in the first half where the guy just took a swipe at his ankle, nowhere near the ball, went down, ref played on. It was just genuinely baffling, some of the decisions he made, Tim. I think you're right. A lot of guesswork going on by someone who I believe he's there because he's an ex-pro. Proof that just because you do one job, you can't do another job just because you think you might be able to. Steve, I'll move on. We get to the end of the game. They score a third. What do we think about this game in the grand context of the season? Is it one defeat, or is it a sign that the pressure is getting to people at the club where we get closer and closer to that end goal?
I think it's a freak result. I'd like to think it's a freak result. They're like Tim mentioned earlier about the basics. We haven't really seen any sign of this team capitulating like that before. And normally when we get in front, we manage the situation relatively well. And even if we kind of concede a goal, we then step up and manage the game to see it out. So to me, it's a Blackburn 0 Crewe 1. It's a freak result that hopefully we won't see again. There's lots of factors that went into it. There's lots of kind of mistakes, both on and off the pitch, that we've made. But I saw enough there that everyone's mentioned, we dominated the game, and yet a series of freak decisions and incidents on the pitch went against us, and we've ended up losing it 3-2. And I think the stats, and I know we don't like stats after last week's conversation, I think the stats were 4 Morecambe shots on target, and they've scored from 3 of them. We had about 26 shots, probably 20 of them from Rowe when he came on, to be honest. It's a freak to me. Although in a week's time, if we've lost, I might have to revise that opinion.
I'd agree with Steve. We haven't looked like we were going to get 3 goals put past us for a while now. We've been in control of the games. Defensively, we've been sound. I just felt yesterday that the goals that they got, 2 of them, Mickey's in the 6-yard box, just in front of the goalkeeper on 2 of the goals. Another one is, even though he played really well, I just felt he was trying to do too much himself defensively, and he's in the 6-yard box defending. The third goal, especially, the lad got across him, and another centre-half, their centre-half got across him. And I don't know why we succumbed to that. It was a really strange game. But when it went to 2-2, I was sat next to Mark Birtles, and I says that they'll win this. Everybody knew it. And I think the players, I don't know why, but I think that got into the players' head. And I don't think the crowd got behind the team enough yesterday when we were behind. They were fine when we were in front, but when we were behind, it got a bit edgy. And I think that's when the crowd need to be behind them.
Can I just pull you up on something you just said there, Trev? And this is almost blasphemous, what I'm about to say. So, make sure I finish the whole sentence before anyone jumps down my throat. You said Mickey had a good game. I disagree. And I don't think he was very good last week at Notts County, but I think we glossed over it because he scored. And also, we won. I think he dived into a couple of challenges last week at Notts County that he was lucky to get away with. I think he's got caught out a couple of times. And I think you're probably right. I think he's trying to do too much when he already does quite a lot, maybe with the captain's armband. I think he was very lucky to only get a yellow card on Saturday when he headbutted the stomach or the thigh of the Morecambe player that had wrestled him to the ground. It was a penalty, don't get me wrong. And then, I think it is difficult to criticise a man who has done so much in such a small time for the club in terms of on the field, off the field, helping out, getting results, leading a good team. But I just think maybe he wasn't at his best yesterday. Silence. That's me on my own dying.
No, I wouldn't disagree. As I said previously, I just felt he was trying too hard. He was trying to... And sometimes you can try too hard. It's a strange thing to say. But yeah, I'd agree a little bit. But I just felt he was a threat. The penalty in the first half was the one that struck out for me. Maybe going back to the referee, because he was an ex-pro and that goes on all the time, he was one of these, well, it goes on all the time. But it wasn't. I mean, the one showing on Twitter in the second half, if that's not a penalty, then I gave up with what is. I wouldn't have a clue. That isn't.
Yeah, for the record, still love the man, still think he's one of the best signings we've had in recent years. I just think the last couple of weeks he's been slightly off his normal standards, but with the qualification that his normal standards normally get him in the EFL team of the week, so it's quite a high standard that he's set for himself that I am judging him by. But yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't sure. Steve, we're going to come on to the Doncaster chat in a minute or two, but I'm going to get your opinion on one thing already before we get to there. Unchanged team, or are you looking to change the goalkeeper?
I mean, he's there at the moment because Booth's fit, but to be fair to Davis, he'd done okay since he came back into the side. I think definitely the first goal is down to him yesterday. We all know that. Arguably, I don't think he covers himself in glory with the second goal. The bloke leathers it pretty well. But I'm still thinking we've seen this before from him. He's got to push it out wide rather than push it back into the danger area. But there's a danger with goalkeepers that you get in the situation where you're chopping and changing all the time. As soon as they make a mistake, you change. And I don't think that's good for anyone. And I think when he was dropped last time was at the end of a run when he'd made a number of errors and it was time to take him out of the firing line. I think I would stick with him at Doncaster next week just to restore a bit of faith and a bit of belief in him, because I think mentally he's looked stronger since he's come back. But I think you've got to cut him a bit of slack and stick with him for next week. And I'm not a fan of him, but I think that's the best approach to take.
Tim, is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah, probably. I think the challenge for me is if it had been something different, I'd be liable to say, well, that's just, you know, one of those things. He's a goalkeeper, he's young, it happens. But it just seems like it's the same old technical flaws that we saw from his previous time in the team. So I think I'm probably maybe a little bit quicker to say that's just who he is rather than that's just a one-off. But yeah, I think Steve's probably right. Probably stick with him for next week.
Okay, last thing I want to talk about then for this game, and Trevor, I'll come to you first, is if we'd have recorded this on Saturday night after the game, then Dave's bleeper button would have had to been sort of in full use, I think, for me, maybe from the three of you as well. I was really angry last night. And is that because we haven't seen a performance like that for a little while? Is that what it was that led? I can't be the only one, I'm sure, that felt really sort of disappointed with that yesterday.
Yeah, because we got ourselves into a position in the game and in the league table that it was in our hands. It still is, because we've still got to play Wrexham. But it was still in our hands. And you just feel with a defeat like that and the way, in the manner of it, that maybe we've slipped away. And we're going to be disappointed in 11 games' time after the game. Looking back at it now, we haven't played that poorly for a long time. What is it? We've lost 2 in 12, something like that. Our home form's not been great because other teams come to sit in, and they came to sit in yesterday. And then we know what happened. Next week's and not lose the game now, because that would start to get psychological. Don't lose at Doncaster. Don't have to win. Just don't lose at Doncaster.
I think the thing for me about that, the reason I was so angry after the game was it was totally self-inflicted. As Trev said, they came to sit in. They came to make it difficult. They came for a 0-0. And we'd done it. We'd done what we had to do. We'd got in front. We'd made them change their game plan. We made them bring a load of subs on. And then we committed Harry Carey by getting lazy and arrogant and not doing the basics well. And we're going to have some more games like that. We're going to have, you know, we've got Sutton at home coming up. We've got Forest Green at home coming up.
Grimsby,
yeah, potentially. You know, I think we've got a couple of other home games where they will come for wins. I think Wimbledon will, and I think Wrexham will. And those two games are actually more likely to suit us than the three games where they're likely to sit in and try and frustrate us and make us play in front of us. And all our away games coming up, they'll probably follow the pattern from our recent away games. You know, we'll be able to catch them on the break because they'll have to come forward because they're the home team. So, you know, hopefully those games will suit us really well. And I don't think what happened on Saturday will have any impact on our away games, but we just need to be better at home. And when you get 2-0 up against a team that's come to defend, you can't just let them back into the game like we did. So that was why I was angry. But, you know, for me, it's a one-off. We've been really good, and let's just keep behind the team.
I'm glad you just said that, Tim, because yesterday on the whistle, you said that you thought Crewe was sloppy, lazy and arrogant. Now, you sent that on the whistle. obviously emotions are quite high at that point. It sounds to me like you'd stick by those emotions today in the cold light of the next morning.
Yeah, as I say, I think it was completely self-induced. We had them exactly where we wanted them, 2-0 up against a team that had come to defend. We made them change the game plan, and then we stopped doing the basics well, and we let them back into the game. It's the first time it's happened. And, you know, Lee Bell was very keen in his post-match interview to say, we need to learn from that. And I think as long as we do, then it's fine. If we don't and it becomes a habit, then that's when you start to worry. But, you know, we're a young team. We're in a position we didn't expect to be in. Everything's been rosy. There's always going to be a few speed bumps along the way. It's how you react to them. Now, when we've had setbacks in recent history, we've bounced back and gone on great runs. So, you know, I think this team and this management team are well capable of righting the wrongs of Saturday. And I think we will, if I'm being honest. So, yeah, I thought we were sloppy and lazy and arrogant, and we paid the price for it. Let's hope it doesn't happen again.
Steve, if I can just finish with talking about emotions at the final whistle. There was a little bit of unpleasantness at Gresty Road yesterday, wasn't there, with a fan and Courtney Baker Richardson. Is that just a case of people's emotions getting the best of them? Maybe building on what Tim just said there, we've had a great season. People maybe sort of forgetting what our expectations were and what the reality is. Or what was your take on the matter?
I believe I know what the chap said to CBR. I'm not sure if we want to repeat it on here. But I think whoever said it just needs to bear in mind the previous two seasons before this and how dreadful we have been. And whilst I get the frustrations, for all the reasons that Tim has just mentioned, that was a self-inflicted defeat. But, you know, take it, go home. There's no point abusing our own players. It just, if you want to be critical of them, send a tweet into the podcast, come on the podcast, talk constructively rather than gobbing off at them. The flip side of that is I actually think our players themselves, if one remark like that makes you lose the plot, I'm questioning how you've actually become a professional footballer, because you must have heard worse than that before. And the players just walk off the pitch. The only person that comes out of that situation well, I think someone mentioned this on the pod chat last night, was Mickey, who diffused it all, really. CBR's got to walk away. He's frustrated as well. Get down the tunnel. Take it on the chin. I'm sure you've been called worse in your career than that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Steve. I don't really get what you're hoping to achieve by slagging off your own players for the team you support. What are you? You're hoping that by saying something, they're going to go, oh, right, I best fix that for next week then and become better. It's never going to happen. The only thing you get out of it is a short, momentary release of the annoyance or the frustration you're feeling. But Trevor, Steve just mentioned there about Baker Richardson's reaction. I think a lot of that frustration is maybe built up into the fact that he hasn't really been playing very well recently. I think we are a stronger team with Neva on the pitch. I think Baker Richardson has lost a bit of his form.
I think the miss at the end of the game when he could have made it 3-3 would have been raw in his mind. Because he should score there. You know, let's be honest, is he had that. And he slid to get the ball instead of just putting his foot through it and putting it in the top of the net. I think that would be in his mind. He was actually signing autographs at the time when the culprit said it to him. But you've got the culprit had a young lad with him, must have been 12, 13 by the looks of him. And his dad was getting dogs abuse from the rest of the supporters. They were giving it him real bad. And you've got to feel a little bit for his lad. What you know, get your dad getting called a W, you know, as you're walking alongside the pitch. And the stewards took him the complete length of the pitch to the back. So I don't know what'll happen with it, but he was out of order. Maybe CBR was out of order, and like you say, but I think his emotions were really raw, because at one point he could have got us the equaliser. Whether we'd have deserved it after the last 20 minutes, who knows, but he should have scored. And yeah, I get the point that how's he become a professional footballer with that like that, but I'm not sure saying what he said to him is the right way to go about it.
All right, I think that will finish us with that disappointing move. We'll all move on together to Doncaster on Saturday, which we'll talk about in a minute. But first, we'll hear from the women's team, who were back in league action at home to the Cheadle Town Stingers.
So, Matt, your unbeaten home record's gone, but it's gone at the hands of the team that are on the top of the league. So some mitigation there. How's your, what's your overall feeling about the game?
There isn't some mitigation. Obviously, it's a game that we come into knowing that would be tough. I think if we'd have lost it in different circumstances, it might have been a bit easier to take. Had we have turned up today and been overawed by a superior talent that are going to walk away with the league, we could have probably understood it looking at the league table. They're doing really well. But the fact that we've been the better team, and I know I'm biased, but a number of people have stopped me after the game saying that they believe we played the better football. You know, delegates from Everton have been here watching the Everton girls today, and they've said they felt like we were playing the better football, and they had one plan, and they were doing that plan relatively well, but we played the better football. But if you don't defend your set pieces well enough, you're going to get caught out, and that's what happened. You know, we didn't defend the first set piece, the corner in the first half, and then a corner in the second half. Hannah has had a relatively quiet game, apart from coming and dealing crosses really well, which she does. But yeah, two corners, not dealt with, two goals. So tight game, but like I say, disappointed in the manner we lost it in.
Yeah. How do you feel about some of the players that started? You rang the changes before the from last week.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the goals that came in?
I felt like they did pretty well, to be fair. Really well in some cases. I mean, it was always going to be difficult. The players aren't going to have match fitness. So Eva hasn't started the league game. She started the Carlisle game, and the cutback to come off quite early due to an injury. You know, Garner's not been playing. Heath's not been getting the minutes. And when she has, she's had no continuity with her position. So it's been difficult for her to get into a groove. And then to throw them in against top of the table, you know, it's not easy. The reason why we did that, there's multiple reasons, but one of the main reasons we set them was the target is that we aspire to be the top team on the table, sort of long term. So we kind of need to compete with these teams, otherwise, you know, what we aspire to be and what we can realistically achieve are two different things. We did. I thought M. Heath and Eva Rose, I pick on them just because of the young years. I thought they came in and did brilliant. You know, we thought it'd be a bit of a baptism of fire for Eva with them being dominant in wide areas. You know, the wing backs, they do really well. I thought Eva was class, both in and out of possession. She's such a credit to, I know her dad was a pro, and she's got real fight and fitness, and she's great in the tackle. She's going to be a real special player. We're excited about her, and I thought she did really well today. Like I say, M did well. You know, Garner did well. You know, she did some good phases of play, and she's got that quality to open up a defence. So, yeah, pleased with them.
And power off the bench.
Yeah, definitely. When you look at your bench, you've got, like, Gibbo, Leah. So you got two of your top three top goal scorers on the bench. But obviously, we have to appreciate that, you know, over the course of the season, we've been in situations where we haven't had a squad that can deal with injuries, and this season we have, but we've had to adapt as coaches, and the players have had to adapt to a degree that rotation is a relatively new thing for our club. But if we want a strong squad and a big squad to compete, then we have to rotate, and you might not necessarily have done anything wrong, but there is certain things you can do to make yourself undroppable. Lots of goals, lots of clean sheets, etc. But the vast majority of players have rotated well this season, and the players that are on the bench are just chomping at the bit to get on. I know they were eager during the game to get on, but we've just got to start again. That unbeaten home record's gone. Has to start again, starting with a massive cup game next week.
That's great, mate. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Okay, Tim, we've just been talking about a 3-2 at Crewe that happened on Saturday. I would much rather be happy talking about the 3-2 at Crewe against Doncaster earlier in the season. The day when the defenders did all the scoring for us.
Yeah, this game is, as Trevor mentioned, it's got a real kind of important feel now after what happened on Saturday. It was an interesting one, the home game against Doncaster. I don't think we actually played that well that day, did we? But I think the defenders got us out of trouble a little bit. As I said, though, I think we're probably more suited to playing away these days, just with the style of play, with, you know, the sort of counter-attacking style that Lee Bell's employing. I don't think Doncaster are in particularly good form. Does that mean because we're possibly expected to win, it becomes, a little bit more of a challenge than some of the ones we've been to recently, where we've been underdogs? Maybe so, but yeah, I'd still be relatively confident about getting our result.
Trevor, do you think we've got ourselves in this weird situation now where we are almost happier away from home than we are at home?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? I'm a form since since the Newport game, actually, when we should have really won there. It's been terrific. You sit there and you think, we're in control. You're away from home when you're in control of the game. I mean, the Stockport performance was terrific. Last Saturday was great. We had that little wobble when they scored, but never felt they were ever going to get back in it. Tranmere was a good performance. Mansfield was excellent. We went with a game plan. We scored early and we sat in and said, can you break us down? And they couldn't. So, yeah, we are better away from home. And all the supporters that went to Notts County, I'd like to see them at Doncaster because that on Saturday is when the team are going to really need us. If we can get behind them at Doncaster, I know money's a big situation and, it's easy for me to say that. But, yeah, if we can get enough supporters there and make it feel like an home game, with the crowd like we did at Notts County, for 90 minutes, they never stopped. As Tim said, Doncaster not in great form, which is surprising because they've got some good players. They win a couple of games and you think, oh, they're going to come with a run. And then they lose a couple and where are they? Fifth from bottom, sixth from bottom. On form, I would say we should be getting something. And I'd love us to win there, honestly, because when we got relegated there under Mr. Artell and that was a shocking performance. So yeah, I'd love us to win there.
I'm a, like Steve. Steve, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I don't think it's any secret that you have teams that you just don't like around the country for various small or large grievances you feel they may have done to you in past. Doncaster are one of mine. I don't like them mainly because of that Jason Price goal that stopped us going to what would have been the Millennium Stadium at that stage. Trevor, I'm going to give you the final question on this section because. The one of the reasons you're on today was because Alex Arani brought your name up last week in a disagreement that he had with you about Rio, and I think he was very keen to take the credit for saying he got it right and you got it wrong. So my question to you to finish this section is then: is Rio Adebisi going to be the game chaser at the game changer at Doncaster on Saturday?
I'd like to think so, but you never know. Just to come back to Alex a bit, yeah, I'd have released him at the end of last season if his contract was up, but he's done really, really well this year, and you've got to admit that. He's athletic. He never misses a game. He's always fit. He gets up and down. You don't need to take him off. He can last the 90 minutes. He's benefited a little bit that Mickey Dimitriou's on his side of the field, left-sided defender. But yeah, all credit to him. But Alex is a bit premature in saying that he's the level of Harry Pickering. So yeah, he's done well, but he's not in Harry Pickering's class at the moment.
Thanks for that, Trev. I'll stick with you. What's the score going to be on Saturday?
I'm going for a resounding 3-1 victory.
Steve?
I'm just going to go back to your previous point. I actually didn't have a grievance against Doncaster. It's one of the few teams in this division I didn't dislike. But now you've reminded me of that bloody Jason Price goal. And you're right. I actually hate them as well. So
I
I
think
was
that's
going to.
23 now, is it, Steve?
I don't mind Wimbledon, the real Wimbledon, not those tramps from MK. I was going to go 2-2 draw, but now I've realised I hate them. I'm going to go 3-1 win to crew.
Okay. And Tim?
Yeah, funnily enough, that Doncaster game was a coasting 2-0 and losing 3-2, wasn't it? Familiar scenario after the weekend. Yeah, I fancy us to bounce back. Fancy Lee Bell to get a tune out of us on Saturday. We are. I'm gonna go with Steve. 3-1.
Lovely stuff. Okay, I spoke to Dan to get the Doncaster perspective. Hiya, Dan. Welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Not a problem. We'll start, if we can, with the game back in November. It was a 90-second minute winner. I guess, you know, with that, there's always two sides to the story, two sets of fans. What was the takeaway from what I imagine was quite a disappointing end result from that game?
Yeah, I thought we did enough to get at least a draw, really. I think we started that game really well, got a goal ahead. It was turned around by half time. But I think in the second half, we started quite brightly, got ourselves back in it. And then I thought there was a good period in it where we probably looked the more likely. But then towards the end, I think we made a few subs, possibly dropped a little bit deeper. But I think the goal was so soft from memory. It was almost like, I think your left wing back got in and slid it across, and it was like a 2-on-1 in the middle, which was like obviously criminal from our perspective. But yeah, we've had a few games like today's, not dissimilar, where we get ourselves back into a game and we find ourselves on the wrong side of it. But that probably shows why we've struggled in the main. But yeah, I thought all in all, you'd probably have said a draw was a fair result. But if anything, we probably looked more likely to nick it as the game went on, but obviously we didn't in the end.
Now, you've just mentioned today's game. It should be sort of just mentioned that it is Saturday when we're talking. So do you want to just fill us in on what's happened with Doncaster from that Crewe game in November up until Saturday's defeat at Walsall?
Yeah, we had it was strange, really. We had a really slow start to the season. Then we had a really good sort of run, which possibly coincided, when you look back now, on playing a lot of the teams who are down there with us. Then we played at Wimbledon and yourselves, which at the time we were going into quite confidently, but we sort of got nudged out of both of those games. And then we got a couple more results, but then we lost 6 out of 8 after that and found ourselves back in trouble. And then up until today, we'd been on probably our best unbeaten run of the season. So we've almost had two very similar periods where we've sort of got very few points out of a clutch of games and then sort of a good amount of points out of the next few. But yeah, we've just been pretty hit and miss, really. Although, like I say, going into today, we were 5 unbeaten. I think we'd got 11 points out of 5 games, and we equalised today and looked again in a position where we could go on and at least get a point. But similar to the game at your place, we got sort of edged out late on again. But yeah, we've been very sort of up and down, although, like I say, going into today was our best run of form.
So I think, Dan, with you being 12 points clear of the drop, probably playoffs being unrealistic, is this a case that this could be Crewe's first game of the season against a team on the beach, or is that not how you see it?
It's, yeah, we're probably in that weird sort of phase of the season now where I think we seem to get stuck in the late 20s in terms of points for quite a while. And I just feared at some point the bottom two might show a few signs. And in the last few weeks, they have, although today's results, again, probably show why the bottom two are still, you know, big favourites to go down. Forest Green losing at Grimsby, Sutton losing to a late goal. But with them showing signs, I still think, I've always thought we probably need somewhere around a point a game to make 100% sure. So having been in the 20s for so long, we then took 11 points from 5 games, and we've almost, up until today, like breezed through the 30s. I mean, I guess that's how sort of depressing the situation's got. We're almost looking at just getting through blocks of 10 points to see how many we can get. But you'd think realistically we should be okay. But I think we've got Bradford on Tuesday. I think if we won there, for example, there'd probably be less of an edge on next Saturday. But if we did lose there, I mean, the pitch is absolutely awful there. We went there in the cup a few weeks ago and struggled a bit. We still need, I think we probably need 2 wins, and then that takes us somewhere to around 45, you know, 46 points. I just think we're in that period where if we think we're okay, we could just get drawn down again. I mean, it would rely on one of the bottom two sort of producing really good form between now and the end. But I think I'll probably feel easier when we've got that sort of 45, 46 points. I think then we'll be safe. But I think, like I say, we've got Bradford, yourselves. We've then got Colchester, and not long after that, Forest Green. So there's still a couple of teams around us. So I think, you know, if in 4 or 5 games' time we've got 6 or 7 points, I think then we'll be on the beach. Up until then, I still think we're not good enough to take any game as if everything's fine. I think we still need every point we can get at the minute.
Okay, that leads us on to Saturday's game then, Dan. What do you think the score is going to be when the two teams play?
Yeah, it's. Just going into today's game, I thought it was a tough-looking 3 games with, I think, Walsall, Bradford, and yourselves were almost the 3 form teams. So I was looking at them 3 games thinking what realistically we're going to get. And I think, again, going on that point of game, I was looking at, you know, even if it was 3 draws, you'd probably take that. But obviously, having lost today, feels like we could do with a win out of one of the next couple of games just to keep it ticking over. But yeah, I was surprised with your result because that being 2-0 up when you won, we just equalised, I think, around that time, thinking, you know, it looks like you're going to get a comfortable win and we get a point. And I think at that point, I'd say Crewe would have been favourites. But I think we've had so many away games recently. We have actually won our last couple of home games. So having had a bit of a blip at home, we look a bit more back to our reliable selves. So, I mean, hopefully, I don't think there'll be much in it like the home game. You always like to think things even out. And I thought we probably should have had something out of that first game. So if you're putting me on the spot, I'd say, you know, hopefully a sort of 2-1 home win. But we've had very few draws at home this season. And I don't know, I guess you're still in the position where you'll not need to win every game. But I suppose draws aren't much use in the way, are they? So it wouldn't surprise me if it was sort of, you know, 2-1 either way. But I'll go 2-1 to us, obviously, to put the positive slant on it.
All right, Dan, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, to finish off this week then, we have been joined by two people whose voices you might recognise, Adam Goode and John Rogers. Hello, guys.
Hello. Good
morning. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Thank you very much. So we've got you guys on today. You both work for the club. You've both done the same job at the club. Adam, you are currently in that job, the stadium announcer. I was just hoping, whilst you're on, you can just tell us a bit about what the job is, what it entails, and how you got it.
Well, I actually used to work for the club a long, long time ago. It was actually my first job when I was 16. I worked in the ticket office for 10 years. I did press and scouts. I was obviously in the ticket office selling tickets. I was on the away end. And then in my last season, coincidentally, the Johnson's Pate Trophy winning season, I actually did a bit of commentary for the club DVD that I don't think was ever released. But obviously, it was a great experience, you know, being next to, you know, the people in the Sky Sports News studios and all that. And obviously, it was fantastic that we had such a great season. And then I'd sort of always been a season ticket with my dad for many years. And then COVID sort of hit. And because of his medical history, he had to sort of take a step away from the club. So I've sort of been going in frequently. Obviously, I'm still a huge Crewe fan from growing up. And then obviously, I saw that there was an announcement on the Crewe Alex website that they needed a stadium announcer. And I sent an email in. And funnily enough, I think because they knew me already, and I actually in my spare time do a lot of amateur dramatics, like, you know, amateur theatre. So I'm obviously used to performing in public and speaking. I've done a bit of voiceover work as well in my past. And so, yeah, I went in for an interview, if you call it that, a bit of a chat. And before you know it, I'm reading a team sheet out in an empty stadium in front of the whole office and Charles Grant. So, yeah, sorry to obviously rattle on, but yeah, that's me and my background and how I got the job.
What does the job entail then, you doing? Like, what is the day to day of a Saturday afternoon for you?
Well, as soon as I get there, obviously, I arrive, you know, you have to, you know, dress to impress, or, you know, obviously, you know, it's, you know, not blowing my own trumpet, but it's, you know, people see you, you're in the public eye. So, you know, you obviously have to look smart, look the part. I get there, I sign in, and you know, the process starts then. You know, you test your microphone, you set the music thing up, and then, you know, we go through all the announcements for the day. You know, I speak to people within the club. Is there any special, you know, anything special, like a minute silence, like, or, you know, anything that I need to know about? And, you know, what are the mascots, what are the flag bearers? I then go and get the team sheets from the tunnel, and then make sure that they're typed up and then distributed. And then from that, I toddle off to my little booth and get ready for the match, really, and make some notes. And if there's anyone collecting for charity, you know, I go and ask them, you know, what charity they are, so I can promote them. So yeah, there's a lot of walking around and speaking to people, but that's normally me before 2:40 on a match day.
Yeah, and I would add, you know, you've been really good with us. You often message me and say, is there anything for us to plug? And my answer is normally just, yeah, just the podcast, please, if possible. John, I'm going to turn to you because you had Adam's job before him. Just really quickly, what's your connection with the club? How did you end up getting that job? And then if you move on to what it is you do now.
Yeah, right. I obviously took over from the great Andy Scoffin. Andy was poorly, so it was during COVID, actually, just as COVID hit and nobody could really go to the games. I was actually manning the front doors as the previous job that I had to go into announcing. Anyway, Andy didn't take too good. He had a bit of a downturn with his voice. So the club asked me if I could shadow Andrew, let him do what he could do, which just shadow him. So even though there's no one in the grounds, or very few, you know, we still did the bits that Andy tells you about. That obviously not so many announcements, but we had team sheets to do and read the teams out and meet directors. So anyway, I shadowed Andy for a while, and there were some games he couldn't really talk so well towards the end mainly, and I would take over. And then, the year he died, bless him, I was due to take him to the Wolves game. We're playing Wolves in the pre-season, first one. And he was very poorly at this stage, like, but that was the game we were just trying to get him to. And unfortunately, Andy passed away about 12 hours before kickoff. I'd been to see him the dinner time before, like, and just prep what we were going to do and how we were going to get him into the ground. And I woke up to the news that Andy had passed away. So I took over from the Wolves game, like, and then did it for 2 and a bit years. But I got then offered the chance to do more of what I was like doing the match day announcing, but I started to do the hosting in the rights lounge. And it was quite hard, you know, mixing the two. And sat down with James one day and he sacked me from the PA job. We just had a little chat, like, and it was time to, you know, hand over. And to be honest, Adam's done a great job. So I now look after, I bring old players back from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and thoroughly enjoy that. I know most of them, some I don't. And I bring them back on match day, try and get them over, depending on timings. I do try and take them over to the smaller club, to the railway lounge. But then we have them on the stage. We utilise Graham McGarry. Graham interviews the lads, like, and I think it's working very well, actually.
Yeah, you've had some big crew names on there since it started. I think, it's something that's really going on. I think that also leads us into what's happened this Friday as well. There was quite a big event, wasn't there, John? And Trev, I think you were there. What was going on Friday night at the club?
Scott Kinnersley, we've got to start with Scott, actually. He did all the work. He was fantastic. And he wanted to do a dinner for the 89 promotion team that they've not been forgotten, like, but nothing ever seemed to have been done for them boys, like. So Scott and help of a few others, like, but mainly Scott, he got in touch with all the team from that era, 88, 89, and I think it was 12 turned up on Friday night. There was a few absentees, Kenny Swain being one. But I have to say, I've been to many, many, many dinners, but the night was absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure Trev will agree with me on that one.
Yeah, it was excellent. You couldn't fault it. The players were terrific. You know, they had interviews with Graham and got on the stage, and Peter Billing was the highlight of the night. But everybody, you know, for the players to come, those that came from down south, you know, it's a big thing for them. And I thought it was excellent. Paul Fishendon, Andy Sussex, you know, it was 20 years since the promotion before that they came up. And for somebody who'd been through that 20 years and to see them players do what they did that season, it was a joy to watch.
Yeah, they thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, like you say, the Paul Fish, Andy Sussex come from down south, Dino come from Cambridge, but Scott invited, there was one person out of that squad who's no longer with us, and he was a kingpin of that team, Dale Jasper, and his wife Sheila came to the event, and Graham got her up on the stage, and she was fantastic. A few tears towards the end, but I did have a brief chat with her yesterday at the game, actually. And she said she wouldn't have missed it for the world. And she knew Dale was with her, on the night. He would have loved that night, she said. And it was a credit to everybody. The room was, I've never seen it so full, actually. I was a bit late getting in. I didn't get into the room till about 7:30. I couldn't believe the amount of people that were in there. It was best night of my life, to be honest, other than the kids being born and meeting my wife, but I get that in. Hey, Trev?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I echo them, you know, they had a shirt from that season and it went to Dale Jasper's charity, and it was £600, I think went for.
Yeah.
I never bid for that at that price.
You dropped out about £550, or was it £5.50?
Yeah, £5.50. You were right there, John.
But cracking night, though.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like from the pictures, it was superb. And, you know, we did do a podcast with a few of the 88, 89 winners. I think, was it 3-4 years ago now, Steve? We did that one.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely missed out on that one. A couple of years too early for me. Adam, I'm going to come back to you. There was something new for you to announce at the stadium yesterday's game, the new ticket deal for the rest of the season. Do you want to just explain that rather than me explaining what that is?
Yeah, the club have obviously, as a, you know, with the, they've had a few ticket offers this year. Obviously, you know, it was amazing to see a stadium so full for the Barrow game. Unfortunately, the result didn't quite match the atmosphere, but they've launched a ticket offer with a mini season ticket, they're calling it. So basically the three crunch games, which is on April the 1st is Forest Green Rovers, April the 13th, which is Grimsby Town, and then is it April the 20th is Wrexham. Obviously that could be a hugely important game depending on how results go towards now and the end of the season. And the offer is basically for adults, you can get tickets for all three games for £20 each rather than the normal 27. So essentially you're getting one game free. Also there's reductions for the other age brackets, concessions, juniors. I think if you pay a full paying adult for that mini season ticket offer, you get an under 11 goes free. So, you know, obviously it could be, you know, lads and dads, so to speak, coming along. And yeah, it's just a way for the club to try and pack the stadium. Obviously we've had fantastic away followings this season, you know, 1,500 plus at Notts County and obviously Stockport. And I think, you know, we want the super crew at home rather than the super crew away, you know, not to say we want the away support to diminish, but I think it's important that we get as many passionate crew fans into the ground as possible. So yeah, that's the mini season ticket offer that's on at the moment.
Tim, I'll bring you in here. You've got a season ticket, I'm led to believe. Broadly in favour of this deal?
I'm in favour of anything that gets more fans into the stadium and gives the team the accordant boost that bigger support would. Obviously, the third game of the three is Wrexham, and I can see that being more or less a sellout, even without a ticket offer. So what a great way to potentially help boost the attendance for the two prior games by linking the three together. And a lot of Crewe fans have moaned about the ticket pricing, rightly so, in my opinion. I think £27 is too much. Well, I think people need to put the money where the mouth is now, because you can get to all three of these games for £20 a pop, and you can bring an under 12 with you for free. So let's fill the ground for those three games. I think it's a great offer.
I think that's it, Steve. I think Tim's point there about, you know, ticket prices are too high at 27. I think it's fair to say that most Crewe fans would not disagree with that. But if there is a deal, then you have to sort of make the most of that deal to really show the club that this is what we can do as in terms of a crowd number if the ticket prices were on a deal like that.
Yeah, I think you have to look at, as I think it's already been mentioned, the difference to the Barrow game. You know, a Friday night game against the team. Maybe at the start of the season, we wouldn't have expected them to be as high up as they were. But you have to look at when the offers are put out there, people will turn up. To say it's a shame that the Barrow game fell when it did in the midst of that injury crisis and that 7,000+ crowd didn't quite see the real Crewe. But hopefully, if those same people take advantage of this, they're going to see more of the team that we've seen predominantly this season, rather than the result we saw on that Friday against Barrow.
All right, just one last thing for me today then, and it is basically me handing over to Tim to give us a little last man standing update.
So we had 25 people going into week two, of which everyone went through to week three, except for the five people who picked Crewe. So we are down to the last 20 going into week three. And again, a reminder, the prize fund is £692.50.
You could be buying a Crewe shirt from 1988-89 if you win the prize fund. Tim, last week I mentioned on the pod, you sent me a text just before we started recording saying your wife and my wife had gone through and we had both gone out, which I didn't need to be told. How did your wife get on this week? Because I know mine has already told me she is through to round three.
Yeah, she's through again. She picked Walsall this week, so they won and went through. So she is now 2 weeks further than I got in this competition.
Yeah, me too. And I have been told. I'm going to finish there with this week's podcast. Trev, Steve and Tim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Adam and John, thank you so much for jumping on and helping us go through what it is that you're doing with the club and all the hard work you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your support.
Thank you, as ever, for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, goodbye. Bomb, 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 bomb